Busy city life makes it hard to think about and work at integrating our faith with our lives. Welcome to the Cathedral Podcast, produced and hosted by Jenny Ho Huan. Each episode, we want to help you relate core Christian truths to your daily life. Whether it's science, philosophy, cultural trends, or life stories, we bring you authentic and unrehearsed conversations to spark insight and strengthen your faith and your life.
Should Christians be involved in politics? The simple answer is, of course, yes. We are part of a socio-political fabric. But the question is, how? Hi, this is Jenny, and in this episode, I am so delighted to be talking to my friend, Reverend Dr. Chiang Ming Soon, who is Church History Lecturer at Trinity Theological College, and has been a Methodist and is still a Methodist pastor now for 19 years. And so we want to dive into this subject from the angle of citizenship, jumping off two verses in the Bible, Paul mentioned in Acts 17:26. From one man he made all the nations that they should inhabit the whole earth, and he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. And Romans 13 verse 1 that tells us to be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. So having these two verses framed, the reality that we are part of a geographical region and that there are rulers over that region that we need to interact with and obey and support. Ming Soon, how can we understand, therefore, as Christians, what it means to be at the same time part of a spiritual kingdom and yet being in physical time and space and being citizens, say, of a nation?
Hi, Jenny. Thanks for having me. Yes, we are citizens of both a spiritual kingdom, Christ's kingdom, a heavenly kingdom, as well as a geographical entity, a state here in Singapore. And we have rights and responsibilities and duties to both. We are citizens of both at the same time. And these are not necessarily separate spheres. They coexist together. Right. So we have duties and responsibilities that are the same in both.
Tell me more. We have rights
and privileges that are also the same in both. We may owe different things to each, but they are not necessarily always different. So, for example, if we look at the story of Jesus and the Roman coin. In all the Synoptic Gospels, so it's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and they ask him, is it right to pay taxes? And he says, show me a coin, whose face is on it? And then his famous command, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God, the things that are God. So it can be interpreted in many, many, many ways. Some people say then you have to pay taxes.
That's like the most literal, render to Caesar. So pay your taxes.
So we owe the state taxes. But then the question is, what do we render unto God? What are the things that are of God? So if the coin that bears Caesar's image belongs to Caesar, what is it that bears God's image that belongs to God? And the Bible tells us that we are made in God's image.
That would be us,
Yes, we have to give ourselves to God. So yes, we owe the state taxes, we owe the state service, we owe the state national service even.
Some form of allegiance, abiding loyalty, by the laws. And
obedience, but we owe our lives to God. And so we should give our lives to God. One of my favorite authors is Terry Pratchett. He passed away a few years ago.
The fantasy writer.
For my money, at one time, the greatest novelist in the world. He has a book called Small Gods. And he tells the story of the state of Omnia, which is a mad theocracy, all worshipping the one true God, Om. But, you know, they go all over forcibly evangelizing everybody.
And Omnia Mania.
So that's the name of the land, Omnia. But it turns out there are no true believers. People pay lip service to Om. They do their own stuff. But eventually, they see Om for the first time. And everybody believes. But by that time, all their neighbors have gotten fed up with Omnia. And so they send an invading force to get rid of Omnia once and for all. And so the Omnian army gathers to resist. But the one true believer all through this time, the novice Brutha, he tells him, no, we must surrender. And Sergeant Simini says, I always thought it would be a great thing to die for God. But Brutha says, no, you can die for your country, your people, or your family. But for your God, you should live fully and busily every day of a long life. That's what we owe God's kingdom. Our service, full and busy every day for a long life.
Interesting. That's a fascinating story. Quite a few themes that have hints of the gospel story, right?
Yes.
Yeah, interesting. So what you're saying is that we should step back and have that perspective, a larger framework, that first and foremost, our lives are lived before God and for God first.
Yes.
And while we are part of a nation, a state or whatever, then we also have to express that loyalty and that allegiance as it goes. But what happens when there are situations and perhaps there's a conflict? What the state requires of you, conflicts with your understanding of what it means to be a believer or a child of God?
Well, it's not always an either-or situation.
Mm-hmm.
You can give allegiance to both at the same time.
Sure.
But if you're talking about a situation where, for example, the state says something that requires you to do something against your religion, then, of course, I guess it depends on how faithful a believer you are then.
Mm.
I once had the opportunity to talk to a civil servant here in Singapore, and I asked him, what would you do if you were given an illegal order? And he said very proudly, in all my years of service, civil service has never asked me to do anything illegal or immoral or unethical.
Yeah, I think that's something in Singapore we're generally
proud
really
of.
Proud of and very consoled about for Christians. I think we basically have a very upright government.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, a sound system. Yeah, it's just that that's not the case for many of our brothers and sisters throughout the world. So there are many arguments.
Right.
You can talk about just war.
Yes.
You can talk about
personal
chosen exile. Many different people respond differently.
Correct.
Yeah.
But the thing to note is that allegiance to a government is not the same as allegiance to a state. Governments come and go.
Yep.
You elect people into government, so you can change them also. Allegiance to state is more enduring and overarching. So if you have a government that requires you to do immoral and illegal stuff, I think then you have an allegiance to higher ideals,
right?
Allegiance to a different kingdom.
Yeah. So at that point, then maybe the Christian would say, you know, what I'm being told to do is actually bad for our state, bad for our people.
Yes.
And as a Christian, I can't conscientiously do it. So that's when you maybe will have to exercise some form of resistance. Now, back to Singapore, since we don't really have to worry about that sort of issue, how then can Christians actually be participating in the political life of our society in a way that is constructive and meaningful? And, you know, I think that on average, having grown up in Singapore, most of us don't think much about our political participation and how we, and even for the longest time, we don't even realize that we elect our government because our government being is always conflated with the state and all that. But I think with the younger generation, there's greater awareness now. I had three opportunities to vote. It didn't always come to pass, but, arrived at voting age and all that. And it suddenly dawned on me that beyond paying taxes, there was always the vote. And then now with social media, there are also other ways where we can communicate and give feedback and all that. Can you share with us some really helpful ways as Christians we should lay hold of rightful instruments and approaches to participate and shape our society and have a political voice, perhaps even? Yeah, since we are a democracy.
So firstly, I think Singaporeans or Christians should really exercise their rights in the political sphere. The right to vote, the right to stand for office. Here in Singapore, yes, it's compulsory to vote. But Christians are standing for election. So I think about half of our current parliament are Christians, Protestants and Catholics. So I think that's a good thing. I don't think we are trying to start a theocracy or anything like that. But I think Christians have something good to contribute, our sense of right and wrong, our moral stand, our integrity, and our emphasis on grace, mercy, and love. These are things that we can bring into the political sphere as well. I think Christians should also not be afraid to speak up. There's freedom of speech in Singapore. There are many, many feedback channels that are available for ordinary citizens to give their feedback.
Yeah.
And I think the government does listen to feedback. The question is, how do you give feedback?
Mm.
Do you stand out and shout in a shrill voice, banging on the table? Personally, I myself would be very happy to receive that kind of, you know, feedback or interaction.
Mm.
I don't think it's the Asian way. I think in Asia, we tend to emphasize more guanxi, the building of relationships.
Yes, you wouldn't want to give feedback and undermine the relationship.
Correct.
You want to do it in a way that strengthens the relationship.
Yes, you want to build a long-term relationship.
Yeah.
And you want to be able to give feedback as a credible source.
Mm.
So people will want to listen to you.
Mm.
And you don't do that by shouting or screaming. But
it's very tempting to do that right now with online, right?
It's the Western way, I think. It's the Western way.
So you feel that there is some the Western values crept into our society. And of course, the instrument we have called the internet helps that a lot because it encourages all of us to just keyboard warrior, hammer in our thoughts and our feedbacks without really thinking through the issue sometimes.
Well,
sometimes we don't even read the article. We just like it and share it.
Yeah, sometimes you only read the headlines.
Yeah, and usually they're sensational.
That's right. I mean, they're almost always sensational.
And skewed. Yeah. So that leads us to the fact that maybe there are some things that if as Christians we are also called to specific locations and to be responsible and to be contributing and to be constructive, that we actually, that's part of our discipleship, to be aware that this is all part of an expression of our life living for God.
Yes.
That how we participate in all these processes and all these channels available to us, will be critical as well. It impacts our witness, it impacts our society, right?
Yes. So if you're not happy about something in society, then instead of just standing on the sideline shouting away, you should try and be involved and change things.
Mm.
So I think Christians also be involved in volunteering in society. In, for example, grassroots work.
Mm.
So helping out in your constituency, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Actually, this is a very good point. Personally, as a pastor, right, I struggle with this because I feel sometimes that the local church is such a busy hive of activity.
Yes.
And that we tend to draw people into the church and then they become very busy in the church. But there's this whole component of the church actually being the place to gather so that we can send people off.
Yes.
Would you like to speak into that a bit more, even from the perspective of church history? Therefore, how as a church we might perhaps be more thoughtful and do this better? And have there been times in history where the church has done really well in this, gathering the people of God and sending them out in order to really impact society, instead of keeping them busy running church, you know, keeping the church successful?
I can't think of a specific example offhand.
But yes, it's a broad sweep of 2,000 years.
I will agree. No, I should be able to think about it. But I will agree with you that I think we keep our people busy too much, you know, to the point that they are burnt out. I don't think the church should be a hive of activity, although that's something very easy to do.
Yeah.
And everybody feels that they are actually getting things done.
Yeah, which is a very Singaporean value, getting things done, being efficient.
But, I mean, you look at a cathedral here, St. Andrew's Cathedral.
Mm.
You come here and it's actually a verdant oasis of peace and calm in the middle of a busy city.
Yeah.
It's actually quiet.
Mm.
All these tall buildings around and here, lush green
grass. The sense of space.
It's quiet. And
yes.
It's actually like a tower of strength amidst all this busyness
bustling
and activity.
And yes.
Yes. That's what the church should be.
Mm.
Right.
Like a haven, right?
Yes. A center for spirituality, for building people up, and yes, as you say, sending them back out. I can't think of any. There have been many non-violent movements in the past. We talked about just now, what if the state requires you to do something illegal and immoral? Well, before World War II in the 1930s, the German church stood up against Hitler.
Yes.
And they issued the famous Bremen Declaration. Many pastors were later persecuted. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was murdered in prison, for example. And he signed the Bremen Declaration. But in more recent times, in the Philippines, when the people power rose up against Marcos, it was the Protestant pastors and the Catholic leaders who blocked the main gate of Fort or Camp Aguinaldo to protect the rebel soldiers and officers inside.
That's right.
More recently in Hong Kong, we see pastors also taking to the streets. Yeah. And now we have reports that the theme song of the protest was Sing Hallelujah to the Lord.
Yes, yes.
Once they were being accused of rioting, they started singing the song because any religious gathering, you know, it's not a riot.
It's really clever of them. But it's true. I mean, it shows that the Christian influence is there enough for people to be able to sing that song en masse. We're talking about...
So we can bring millions of peace and grace into situations, right? Even these kind of protest situations.
Yeah. So that's really important. I think basically we're saying that we need to engage, and we need to engage in a way that glorifies God by carrying the virtues and the values of the kingdom.
Yes.
The way of peace, the way of grace, the way of mercy that you highlighted just now. It's fantastic.
So we need to be unafraid to go in. I think one issue is in some places that people are afraid. They're afraid of consequences. And, you know,
Real or imagined consequences, yes.
But where the state has the monopoly on violence and force, it's a very real concern.
Yeah.
In spite of that, I think Christians should be unafraid to step
in. Well, yes. Of course, I mean, I always remember one of my heroes is Bishop Oscar Romero. Yeah, in Salvador,
and
and how he stood up. Of course, he paid with his life, but it showed that there is another way possible. And sometimes we are called to do that.
Yes,
every one of us in our own way. Basically, a Christian is called to show that another way of life is possible.
That's right.
And, and whether you do that through commerce or through politics or through homemaking, that's basically the gospel life we're called to live. Yeah,
precisely.
Okay, I want to. Ask you a question.
Yes.
And maybe I'm wrong about this, but I have the last three decades with globalization and all that, people seem not to be so concerned with being rooted in one place. The excitement is actually moving in being the world citizen, you know, having lived in different places and all that. I would like you to speak into that because I think that then impacts our role as citizens of nations and participants in statehood. Is this something we should be concerned about or not?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're talking about rootedness, I absolutely agree with you that we should be rooted somewhere. And I quite agree with you that now there's this whole draw to go abroad and see the world. But speaking from my personal experience, I never appreciated Singapore more than when I was abroad, and I saw how other people did things and how other places were run.
It's quite insufferable, yes.
I wouldn't say insufferable.
No, like, just thinking.
There are pros and cons everywhere.
It is. But different.
Yeah, it made me appreciate and love Singapore more. First time I came back from a developing Southeast Asian country, I landed in Singapore, I almost fell down and kissed the tarmac.
I know what you mean. That's what everybody feels about Changi Airport when we come home. We're like, whoa, yeah, okay.
Yes. But it wasn't so much Changi Airport, but the contrast with the other country that I had just left. So I'm all for going around and seeing how seeing the world. It is the world, after all, that God created.
Yeah.
And it is my Father's world. I want to see as much of it as I can. But even though I may be traveling abroad, I feel that I'm rooted here. I feel that I'm a patriot. My family and I, we are patriots here in Singapore.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Do the pledge now. Why is that so for your family and yourself? I don't think I will meet an average family in Singapore that will call themselves patriots.
Oh, I think we love Singapore, and my parents were civil servants. They are retired now. Mm. My brother, after all, my brothers and I all served in the military.
Mm.
But my brother has gone further and has volunteered after his NS requirements are over. He's still a volunteer. My dad, I think, my stepdad was a volunteer also.
Mm. Gosh, it runs in your family, man. I see what you see. Yeah. But there is something in all those experiences that informed you and that helped you form that conviction that patriotism is a value, you know? And I think sometimes some Christians feel like, no, we are first kingdom people. We are first, you know, children of God. We are first spiritual beings. And it's a little bit too earthly minded to be so connected and to be so, you know, to have your loyalty. You know, sometimes Christians just feel like we just have to have this singular loyalty to God. And it's like if we feel strongly for anything else, it's a problem. You know, I'd like you to speak into that. Yeah.
Okay. So as I said earlier, I don't think that loyalties have to be in conflict or contrasting.
Right.
We can be Singaporean patriots and faithful Christians at the same time.
Mm.
I think it's also about Jesus' command to love our neighbors or love our neighbor as ourself. Who's our neighbor? And here is our fellow Singaporeans. And loving a neighbor means not just lending salt or sugar or food, but pulling each other up, building a better society, standing up for those who are marginalized, for those who are poor, those who need help. And I think in Singapore, we see many Christians being involved in this sort of work. HealthServe, for example, reaches out to migrant workers, providing free medical care. But it also reaches out to prostitutes in red light districts.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's one way we can be Christian patriots serving the country, you know, in this way.
So I'm hearing you say patriotism, another way to understand it, it's not so much you're waving the flag and you're unquestioningly, you know, going with the flow of whatever the political agenda may be, but basically you are loving the country God put you in, and you are engaging and recognizing that you can play a part in how the social fabric, sociopolitical fabric is, that if there are issues of injustice, if there's inequality that needs to be addressed, if they are the poor, the marginalized, the homeless, that we can all step up to the plate and do something about this. All of this, from your perspective, is active citizenry.
That's right.
Participating in the political life.
Okay. Absolutely.
Mm.
Patriotism, in my mind, is not grabbing a rifle and charging to the front. It is
or balloting
loving
for NDP tickets.
Yes. But it is loving.
I haven't got mine yet. Have you had a chance to go on one?
I've never balloted for a ticket.
But you have been at a parade.
I have been at three parades.
Oh, man, I'm so jealous.
I've marched in one.
Oh.
I've sung in one as part of the combined choir. And I fired off the fireworks in one.
You did?
I was part of the unit.
You see, we never know what lecturers at theological colleges are up to these days. Okay.
Well, in those days, SAF MO base was in charge of shooting off the fireworks.
Oh, yeah, you were a soldier before. I forgot that. Okay.
We were all soldiers once.
So, you know, despite the fact that our world is changing so much, speed is now the order of the day and people are moving so much, I think what you're sharing with us today is that we need to be mindful that God gives us the opportunity to be part of something. And therefore, we must take that location that God has assigned us to seriously.
Yes.
And take the opportunities that are there seriously. I think in Singapore especially, it is an opportunity because we can actually participate in very meaningful ways. There's so many avenues.
That's right.
Right? Yeah. So one final question. What are your thoughts about petitions as a form of political participation?
What do you mean?
Because, quite recently we have some Christians who were concerned about certain concerts and all that. And they felt it was their Christian duty to safeguard the social fabric.
I see.
And they appealed to using petitions and garnering support. to pressurize certain decisions. Just your personal take on this.
Well, I think as faithful Christians, we have a duty and responsibility to love our country and our fellow citizens. But people show that love differently. And I don't want to go and prescribe any one particular way. So if some people are moved to show love in this way, I think then all power to them, you see. There are different kinds of people.
Yeah, and there are
different inclinations. If some people want to do that, I think why not? But I think it has to be done sensitively.
Yeah. Back to your point about basically we are being ambassadors of a kingdom of grace, peace and mercy, right?
Correct.
And I think if we can, I mean, petitions is really dependent on the power of the words that you use, isn't it?
So are you petitioning as a Christian? Are you petitioning as a concerned citizen? I think every citizen has the right to give feedback.
Okay.
Right? You don't want anything to reflect badly on your faith and your church.
That's a very good thought, yeah. So if I am concerned about something happening in my country, I think the starting point is I'm approaching this as a citizen.
That's right.
And I happen to be a Christian, so my Christian faith and convictions inform how I'm seeing these things. But I'm going to convey in such a way that this is for the good of the nation. This is not because I'm uncomfortable, you know, and it doesn't sit well with my religious beliefs. And therefore, indirectly, I'll be imposing my religious beliefs on others. So that is a very... there's a great need maybe to learn the skill of how to do this.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I do have one more question.
Go ahead.
Since we are talking about being part of state and being citizens as Christians, I think one thing that weighs heavily on us worldwide today is just the refugee crisis and the crisis of stateless people like the Rohingyas. Is there a Christian response to this that, you know, that you could just give us some thoughts, get us thinking about this? I mean, maybe firstly, I would tell my children, be very grateful that you are a member of the state because it comes, like you say, it comes with so many privileges. It safeguards your life. It gives you certain rights as well as certain responsibilities and it gives you an identity. It gives you a community. It gives you a place. But these people don't have this. And I sometimes wonder whether maybe the global church should be speaking up for this or doing something about it. Do you have, just your some of your personal thoughts on this?
I think that global church should definitely be speaking up and doing something about it. But as to whether ordinary Singapore citizens here can do something, I think historically we haven't had much of much success in taking in refugees.
Yeah.
Even, with the Vietnamese boat people, we only had one small refugee camp, Hawkins Road, and we only took in people that had already been accepted elsewhere, I think. So, I don't think that's much a small island can do.
Yeah.
But as Christians worldwide, yes, definitely, we should not just be taking in refugees, helping them out, but trying to sort out the root problems of conflict, of war, of economic inequality, poverty, that sort of stuff I think we should be tackling also.
And indeed, for that, our first allegiance to the kingdom of God is very powerful because we have the gospel message of redemption and of second chances. And certainly individual Christians can make decisions, churches can make decisions to go into these hard places and meet and serve needs that are there. That's very true. Yeah. Well, it looks like we should be busying ourselves like you advised us. Yes, we love God, live our lives fully and get busy as Christians in a kingdom that God is building, but also as being members of nations and states where God has placed us.
Yes.
And learning wisdom along the way, how to do that so that we are conveying the values of the kingdom of grace, mercy and peace. Thank you very much, Ming Shun, for coming to talk to us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Thank you for listening in. We hope you've been encouraged with some new thoughts on faith and life integration. You can find us on the Cathedral app, iTunes, Spotify, or at cathedral.org.sg/podcast. Be sure to join us again.